You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Friday. That means we are less than 24 hours from kickoff. The in-state rivalry, the battle for the Paul Bunyan Trophy, the backyard brawl, whatever you want to call it. Michigan hosting Michigan State for the home opener of the 2020 season. As we do on Fridays, we welcome in the worst person in the world. That's right, Brandon Justice, unaffiliated, just a guy that is part of the snarky group chat that I have going. For some reason, we're letting him do this, but he's here. Brandon, welcome aboard. Are you ready to talk some Michigan, Michigan State?
Ahoy, Captain. Yes, I am.
Okay, we don't do ship talk on this show, so that should be noted first and foremost.
Locker room talk.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. That would get us canceled.
The season.
Tis it is. Okay, you wanted to talk early on about how you were right last week.
Partly right, but mostly right, and that's what's important. And I was surprised because let's do a little bit of a rewind back when I was affiliated. Oftentimes, I would expect things from certain games, and more times than not, I was incorrect. So, in this instance, I was more right than I think I've ever been about a game that we don't know anything about, or at least a big-time matchup. I mean, it was pretty easy to predict, like, the blowouts and whatnot. But, I think it went kind of similar, like where I said that Milton wasn't going to have an enormous number, you know, gaudy number type day, but the running backs were going to score a lot of touchdowns, but he was going to be impressive because he's going to be smart, yada, yada, yada. So I thought that was right, just how Milton was going to come out and the running backs were going to score the bulk of the touchdowns. I was wrong in the fact that I thought that Michigan was going to have a close game, but I think, like, me and everybody else thought that. Those who didn't, Isaiah, you kind of took the part I didn't get right, you got right. So as a show goes, pretty good first week, I'd say.
Well, I did predict a 1-point Michigan win, but I did say
the score, but you thought they were vastly more talented, and you thought that you weren't nearly as skeptical about that game as anybody else was. So credit to you for that, because you were 100% right on that end.
Right, and now we look forward to, I mean, we got two teams going in different directions, it seems, coming up here on Saturday, I'm a little bit more leery, I think, than others in this one. Not that I think Michigan's going to lose. I think it would be a debacle if Michigan lost this game. I absolutely think it would be a huge debacle and a giant setback for the program. But, I mean, again, you have a Michigan team that is significantly more talented than Michigan State. You have a completely unproven coach in Mel Tucker. Like, what has Mel Tucker done? Has he done anything? Anywhere?
Absolutely nothing. I mean, I scratched my head at that one jump. I think that they were just trying to rush it because of the timing with recruiting and all that. Like, they had to make a decision. And, you know, they lost on Luke Fickell. And you see the things he's doing at Cincinnati this year, which is incredible and good for him for sticking that out and, you know, not going for a brand, right? And, you know, essentially upgrading conferences, I guess you could say. I think that they were just out of ideas by the time that Mel Tucker came to their board and was like, hey, I'm all in. They're like, I mean, hey, at this point, what else are we going to do? Probably not that exact dialogue, right? But it's kind of the situation. They were out of options, and this is not good after one game, which is obvious. But I think from the jump, this has just not been a good fit. There's no track record. There's nothing to hold on to. At least when Harbaugh came to Michigan, he had a pretty strong resume. Like, sure, they have not been that national contending team that everyone wanted them to be. Maybe, you know, again, we can't tell what's going to happen this year, but in regards to the past, but at least Harbaugh's like, okay, he's done this, he's done that, he's had this player, he's coached this player. I don't know anybody involved with Mel Tucker that lends the hope that you need after that game. I guess, like, you know, the something to hold on to, like, okay, it's going to work out because it's blank. Well, there's nothing there. You know, there's nothing. So I'm with you.
And it's one of those things where you look at teams nowadays. I mean, I fully agree with what Nick Saban had to say last week. It's something I've been saying on the podcast for some time, that the world of college football has changed. You can't go out there and have a and you can't be defensive focused overall, right? You have to have a defensive focus, but simultaneously you have to be able to be a dynamic offense and have a dynamic offense. You just look at all the teams that succeed in the college football playoff. They're the ones that have dynamic offenses and at least good, not necessarily elite, but good defenses. Michigan State seems to be kind of sticking by the same, you know, the same blueprint that's been around. And yeah, listen, that might get you somewhere here and there, but it's not going to get you that far, especially anymore, especially like, hey, if you can slow down Joe Milton and company, then cool. But you also have to be able to outscore them. And I don't think that Michigan State has that capability. And I don't know that it ever will with the kind of mentality that's still up there in East Lansing. So I'm curious to see how this ends up looking in that light. I kind of think of this game as having the potential of being a reverse version of 2013, 2014, or an even more punishing version of 2018. In that, listen, they have a pass game. You look at Rocky Lombardi. He passed the ball for 319 yards. Yeah, he had two interceptions. He also had two touchdowns, but no run game. So if you're that one-dimensional, then you're going to be in trouble. I guess the big question is Michigan secondary going to be able to stop the pass? I have no question, despite what Muhammad Ibrahim was able to do kind of in the second half against Michigan, that they're going to be able to stop the run because Michigan State's offensive line is atrocious. But, I mean,
yeah.
Essentially you're going up against an offense that is just the opposite of dynamic.
Right, and that's where, you know, you ask the question, okay, Rocky Lombardi threw for X amount of yards last week, but like you said, in a very one-dimensional way. You know, however many yards he threw for, they still lost by, you know, multiple possessions to Rutgers. So you think about it in this way, like, if Michigan secondary isn't going to be able to hold up those receivers to the consistent way that it needs to, maybe not to win the game, but just to hold, you know, just to hold them under 20 points or whatever, the pass rush on that offensive line is going to assist them in more ways than one. They are going to get a ton of help from that unit. That pass rush unit is elite. We saw it firsthand week one against, sure, a team that was missing some offensive linemen, so you can remove some of it. But, I mean, those numbers were – I mean, three sacks in a row in one series. I mean, you can't expect that to happen every week. But even with those linemen hurt, numbers like that and situations like that give us the – I don't know. It gives the image that it's going to be consistently that good. And we knew that going in with Aiden Hutchinson and Quiddy Pay. But what about that interior? Well, then you saw Carlo Kemp having a great game. A couple other guys going in there making things happen. Julius Welshoff, good to see him. You know what I'm saying? So it's just one of those things where, like you said, Michigan's vastly more talented. Really the only thing that can go wrong with this game is just, how I like to say it, just funny football. You know what I'm saying? Just one of those things where it's like, it's college football. Crazy things happen, teams show up. And that's really the only possibility that's the only thing that could really hold Michigan back is one of those days in college football. You know, like I hate to say it, but like it's almost to the degree of like an App State situation where really the only explanation as to why a team might lose a game, even though that team, you know, credit to App State, was pretty talented. Regardless, that's the margin, I would say, going into this game based on week one's portfolio. So that's where I'm at with it. It's just, yeah, Michigan secondary raw, gave up some yards last week here and there, a couple big plays, but at the same time, that pass rush against Michigan State's O-line is just going to feast and compensate for everything else around it, in my opinion. So, because it's relentless, and it's Don Brown. So there are moments where Don Brown, you're like, you scratch your head a little bit and you wish you would do this, maybe you wish you'd do that. 3rd and 20, you know, you wish you could drop back a little bit more. But all those things being said, when it comes to a situation like this and you have an offensive line that's depleted and not very good and there's not a whole lot of development in that aspect either, and you have a unit like Michigan's, You know, there are some coaches out there and coordinators out there who would not be as relentless. There's nobody out there, I think, who would be as relentless as Don Brown. Just maybe it won't work out to the degree he wants it to, but it probably will. But in the event that it doesn't, you know, putting that possibility out there, regardless, nobody's going to call the blitzes he's going to call in this game. And the stunts on the D-line last week were beautiful, beautiful. I mean, overloading the right side and sending Michael Barrett off on the Viper edge was just nuts. So, I mean, huge fan of what he did last week, personally, with a unit that's not nearly as talented as the units that he had early on in his tenure here. So, at least in the secondary. It's young, I should say, more than not talented. Young. So,
right, well,
that's
we need to
that game.
We need to continue this on the other end. But first up, we got to tell you a little bit about Built Go. I mean, you want to break through your wall. Whether it's a mental or physical wall, you break through it with Go every day. It's easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages. You can put it in your briefcase, the most focused presentation ever, your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's a 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling, plus it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. 3 delicious flavors. I love all of them. Peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint. So how does it work so well? Well, Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast-absorbing, so it gets into the system fast, plus it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite my work and my workout. Beta-alanine, B3, honey, a kick of caffeine. Built Go then keeps me going strong with B6, B12, 10,000% of your daily percentage. Collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. So visit getbuiltgo.com. Use the promo code LOCKED. Get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at Built Go. Let's go. But after you've had the Built Go, you've built yourself up, I feel like sometimes you just need to chill. So, I mean, if you ever feel like you're always on, what do you need to do when you need a moment to chill? How would you like to hit that reset button and get ready for what's next? Well, these days, with everything being go, 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 it's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time with work, friends, family, a million pressing social issues, and an expectation beyond 24/7. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and it's Coors Light. Listen, mountain cold refreshment, made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. Literally made to chill, like I said. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, perfect for a moment to unwind. Coors Light is the one that I used to choose and the one that Brandon Justice still chooses even to this very moment in the middle of the afternoon. I would normally say get a hold of yourself, but you know what? Coors Light, that's what you need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right. So let's...
Mountains are blue.
They are. Mountains are go blue, apparently, for Brad and Justice at all times. Now, we look at how Michigan could potentially lose this game. I think it's far-fetched. I think a lot has to go wrong because, again, I think that there's maybe 2-3 players on Michigan State that could play for Michigan. I'm not even saying start. I'm saying play. Antoine Simmons, Jaden Reed, the Western Michigan transfer, who had a really good game in his first week with the Spartans. And I'll give you Kalon Gervin, the Cass Tech cornerback as well, who Michigan chased for a minute, but then – once Tyrone Wheatley left, kind of all communication broke down there. Now, with that in mind, to me, the only way that Michigan loses this game is if they go in overconfident. And, you know, that old, like, yeah, you know, we're Michigan, you're Michigan State. We can beat you without even thinking about it. I think that's the only way that can happen. Brandon, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Michigan State has their full attention after kind of what happened in the end of the D'Antonio era, don't you think? You see any potential for Michigan being overconfident? And what other factors do you think could contribute to this being a closer-than-expected game?
Well, I think about this from a philosophical standpoint. For those who don't know, like, I don't mean to siren off or anything, but I coach now kind of full-time, basically. And so from this side of things and from my point of view, something that really goes into a game like this is like you said, the overconfidence. But it's a little bit different than that. To be confident is one thing, but to be confident and accountable is another thing. So if you can be confident and still accountable and still approach the game the same way you approached the games before, then that changes things. Because you can be confident, you can be a little, full of yourself if that's your style, if you're still accountable, meaning if there's still hustle, meaning if there's still you're still covering the assignments. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to really – not hard, but it's a little different to say it from a football, point of view than a baseball one. But everything that goes down with a team and everything that goes down in a loss and an upset from a less talented team to a more talented team has to go with what's going on internally. So internally, with what Michigan State has going on, doesn't seem too good, especially new coach. You guys lose to Rutgers in your first game. Your fan base is mad. I'm assuming some of your players are probably mad, too. I know a certain player wasn't playing a lot, Julian Barrett. No clue why. He's your most talented player as far as just pure raw athleticism goes. So those things are going on over there. They're off a loss, yada, yada, yada. Now, there's really one way to recover from that. That's to rally around this game to change everything. And that's really the only message Mel Tucker can give right now because, like I said, he has nothing to back off of. He doesn't have a first-week win. He doesn't have any real accolades from before that he could probably get an athlete and get him to buy into. It's tough without a whole lot of previous experience. So, and then you look at Michigan's side of things, and I mentioned this to you last week off air, but I guess I'll mention it on now. Michigan's togetherness this year is extremely different than it has been in years past, in my opinion. And that's purely based on the eye test. This isn't like a inside source type thing. That team, when they scored those touchdowns, Josh Gattis was out to midfield with Donovan Jeter when he scored the touchdown. I mean, that's your offensive coordinator selling with your interior defensive lineman. Every time Michigan scored a touchdown offensively, the whole unit was in the end zone. Offensive linemen were coming up to Milton. Milton was going up to offensive line, whatever, vice versa. It was a different sort of energy. Sure, they're winning, so it looks good, yada, yada, yada. But regardless, you and I both, and I'm sure that there's other media members who can kind of back this hunch, that togetherness wasn't there before Josh Gattis offensively at all. And how could it not be? Too many cooks in the kitchen. You can say that as an artist or as an analyst, but talk about being a player and not really knowing who to go to. Okay, I'm messing up with this. Who do I go to? I don't know. I have three different guys I got to answer to. You know what I'm saying? So this is one of those things where right now things are pretty simple, and it's crazy what can happen when you simplify things as your personnel. Because Josh Gattis is the clear leader of that offense. It's not Jim Harbaugh. It's Josh Gattis. There's no longer questions, Jed Fish or Tim Drevno or whatever. And it's not their fault. It's just the positions they were put in with three different roles in one. So there's a lot of togetherness in Michigan. There's not a lot of Michigan State. If there was, they would change things. It's hard to believe a team with that many issues chemistry-wise, Michigan State, seeing what they did last week, can overcome that in a week's time. So that's where I'm at with it, and I think that's how you conduct an upset. Is it has to be team-oriented, and it has to be about checking assignments first and being unselfish, and I just don't see that happening in Michigan State this weekend, at least.
No, I don't either, but I am leery of the fact that this is a team with a back against the wall, right, because you don't want to go down 0-2. I would say the same thing. It's funny because I think I'm just too close to it in the sense of when I look at Ohio State and Penn State also playing this week. Penn State's in a similar situation, but I can't imagine. I mean, you can do one of two things, right? You can galvanize or you can fall apart. I think Michigan State is, as much as I think Michigan's going to get its best shot, it's much closer to falling apart than Penn State is, even though I think Penn State doesn't stand a chance against Ohio State. I think that there's also been a lot of just dumb what have you when it comes out of Michigan State. Mel Tucker refusing to say Michigan, even though the name of the team is Michigan State. I understand you're trying to galvanize your team. You're trying to give them some kind of rallying cry. That might work for a minute, but it's one of those things. And I had talked to someone about what happened last week for Michigan, and there was this kind of feeling from what I was told somewhere near the end of the first quarter when things were still relatively tight, that those in the Michigan locker room felt like, all right, we got this game. It might have been tight still, but it was that, you know what's going on with the guy across from you, and you know that you've got it. So, I mean, Michigan State might do like they did last year or in 2016. They might drive the field, score first, I really want to see Matt Dotson put his finger up to his lips again, but this time in front of like an empty stadium, because I think that that would be apropos for Michigan State. But even if you strike first, I mean, I just watched a thing with Joe Milton on MGO Blue TV where he said, like, listen, when we go down, you know, when we went down against Minnesota, there's no panic. There's no anything other than let's focus on what's next. And I think that that's not really something kind of to your point about togetherness. I don't think that that's what was happening last year with when Michigan was having all the turnover issues. When they were up against it against Wisconsin, it was more of a, all right, well, here we go again. And to me, it's like, okay, well, Michigan State, if you don't turn the ball over seven times, you might have, you know, a better game. You have a better chance. And, you know, if they didn't turn the ball over seven times, chances are they beat Rutgers going away. But they did turn it over seven times. If they turn it over at any point, they're probably not going to be in the same position as Michigan. They're probably going to be of the mindset of, here we go again, because that's what happens when you are kind of mentally fragile. And like you said, there's nothing to galvanize this team. There's nothing to really rally behind. And Tom Izzo can come and talk to your team and say that I've been an underdog before and I've won a lot of those games. Guess what? Congratulations, Tom Izzo. You do that for the basketball team. Basketball and football are different sports, and they have different coaches. So, I mean, I really think that it's a really hard ask for Michigan State to overcome it. I'm not saying it's impossible. I think that people should be leery watching this game, knowing that shenanigans can happen. And if, you know, God forbid, there's a key injury for Michigan or something like that early, it could, you know, or a targeting call that ejects somebody. You know, there could be multiple things that could make this game turn on its head. You just never know. I just still think right. that it's probably infeasible. Brandon, let's move on. We've got only a couple minutes left. Let's get to the final predictions here in a moment. All right, Brandon. It's we're down to it now. Game time coming up. Noon, Fox, national TV, Michigan State, their back is against the wall. What are they going to do? What is Michigan going to do coming out of – listen, I've seen a lot of people say, well, this is just what happens to Michigan every single year. They get hyped up, and I don't think it is the way that it has been this last week, right? Like, Michigan, when it wins a big game, it's no longer a big game, and that is not what right. has happened this week. This week, it's right. – everyone's been like, whoa, right? From Urban Meyer to Joel Klatt to Kirk Herbstreit. And I understand that these are people that tend to give, not Urban Meyer, but these are people that tend to give Michigan the benefit of the doubt quite a bit. Joel Klatt and Kirk Herbstreit particularly. But, I mean, just, you know, even reading like Pete Thamel, Dan Wolkin. These are people that are just in a hurry to say that Jim Harbaugh is a fraud and that Michigan can't get the job done. Now they're kind of changing their tune after one game. That's not something that normally happens. What do you see happening with both of these teams, and what's your final expectation, your final prediction of what happens on Saturday?
Well, I'll tell you what. Last week's game, I think there's one thing you can take away from it among anything else, and Michigan did the little things right. And a lot of times that wasn't what they were good at, especially offensively. I think offensively that was probably their biggest downfall we didn't talk enough about, was they just did not do the little things right, the right reads. Think about how many times last year you're screaming at your TV because Shea Patterson made the wrong read. I say that because people told me that all the time. And from the press box, you can see it. Obviously, I'm not screaming at the TV, but how many comments do we have about that? All the time. Okay, Milton, all of his reads were, I mean, he might have gotten one or two wrong and I didn't see. Little things, right. Getting the ball out quick in the RPOs, he was doing it right. There wasn't a whole lot going wrong. Did they put up gaudy numbers, anybody? Really? No. It was a team effort. That's the togetherness I'm speaking about. Getting your receivers all those touches, that's not just because your receivers are deep or you're good. You have relationships and you have chemistry with all these receivers, right? And you see them all together. I really, 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 really like Joe Milton. I know that we're only a weekend and like you said, it's kind of like the curse of week one for Michigan. Everyone wants to go crazy after week one. There's reason for it now. It's not just it's not just their defense looked good against a middle-of-the-pack team. Their quarterback, their first-year quarterback, their first-time starter went on the road at night and looked real, real good. Real, real good. And did the little things right, and that's really what I like about it. Like you said in the beginning of this podcast, you got to outscore them now. Michigan's never been a team you had to outscore. It's just been a team that you had to somehow squeak by their defense a couple of times, and you were in a pretty good spot. Now you have to worry about their offense, more so probably than their defense. So I'm big on Michigan after week one. I did like that game. They did a lot of little things right, like I said. So I like Michigan to win this one and cover the, I think, it was, what is it up to, 25 now? I like them to cover because this is a team that knows it's really good offensively. This is a team that has together and said it's going to roll into this week. I don't see anything really holding this team back besides 20 football, like I said. So I like Michigan here, and I like them to run it up a little bit. They were so close to that 50-burger last week. I think it means something to them to get that, especially on Michigan State. So I like them 55-17 in this game.
Wow, 55-17. That's pretty big. All right, I'm kind of in the same mindset as you. I am a little bit more leery, not because I think Michigan State is a better team. When I look at the two teams that each played, I mean, Rutgers is historically the worst Power 5 team, period. And I don't know that Rutgers got that much better overnight. Honestly, they didn't do much offensively to get to 38 points, which is they scored all of those on offense. Michigan, on the other end, playing Minnesota. Minnesota, yeah, you lost five starters on the defense or six starters on the defense. But, I mean, that was a defense that was top 10 last year. It did a really good job against a lot of teams like Penn State and Auburn. I mean, Auburn still got a lot of points, but, I mean, this is a Minnesota team that had a lot of confidence. I don't think they went into that game feeling like, you know, here comes this juggernaut Michigan. I think that they went in, you know, fully believing that they had the capability of winning that game. And, you know, there was a lot of people that were picking them. Whereas Michigan State was kind of on the other side, you know, no one thought Rutgers was going to be able to get the win.
Right.
Not even the biggest Rutgers fan or the biggest Michigan State hater thought that that was going to happen. Although I think I actually said that I thought it could happen at one point, but I had mentally told myself that wasn't the case. But I mean, Michigan made a bad a good team look pedestrian. And I think that not enough people are talking about, yeah, the defense gave up 24 points. But guess what? Kendra Morgan had, like, one of his worst games in his career. Rashad Bateman got his, but it was kind of a little too, you know, too late by the time that he started heating up. Mohamed Ibrahim, same deal. And I look at Michigan State, and to me, I feel like it's probably Michigan State got worse because, you know, we know that Brian Lewerke was a halfway decent quarterback. Rocky Lombardi, we don't know that. We don't know that they have a running game because they haven't had one in years. Their offensive line is trash. The defensive line is, mediocre. I just think that Michigan is, it might take them a minute to get going. They're going to get Michigan State's best shot. I don't think it's going to be the, a lot of people are saying 2016 Rutgers. Listen, that's relegated to 2016 Rutgers. That's not going to happen again anytime soon. I am really happy to be wrong about that. I think Michigan wins, not quite to the degree of what it did last year, which was 44-10. I have Michigan winning 42 to Michigan State's 12. I think that Michigan, yeah,
number.
Four field goals. I mean, or two touchdowns with missed extra points, which I don't think is going to happen that way, but that's just the number I'm going with. I think Michigan has just too much firepower. It might take a minute for it to happen. I'm sure there will be a little bit of defeated with dignity in there. But the last time Michigan was also 24 or whatever point favorites against Michigan State, it ended up being a 9-point win, and it was the defeated with dignity headline in the state news. So we'll see. But again, we don't know that Mel Tucker's a good coach. We don't. And I think that's we do know that that Jim Harbaugh is. So, all right, that's going to do it.
We did know that D'Antonio was, which changed things in these games.
Exactly. So that's going to do it for us today. Looking forward to reacting to what most expect to be a Michigan victory. I would say there's only, you know, the only people that believe otherwise are ones that believe in delusion. So, again, not saying that it can't happen for Michigan State. Weirder things have happened, but it's highly unlikely. So that's where we stand. For Brandon Justice, you can request to follow him because he's big time at Brandon B. Justice on Twitter. You know how
VIP
to find
access.
Me. Yep, VIP access. You get the worst takes in the history of takes right there on his
Correct.
Twitter account, which is why it is locked. So I appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you sometime after the game. Peace.